Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. As President Obama and Russian President Putin meet in Mexico and call for an immediate cessation of all violence in Syria, we go to Moscow for an update on press reports that Russia is sending naval reinforcements to Syria, possibly to evacuate its citizens. Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, a Moscow-based independent defense analyst who writes for the only non-government-controlled newspaper, Novaya Gazeta, joins us to talk about what the two increasingly estranged leaders might be able to agree on. Then we'll look into the leadership shuffle in Saudi Arabia following the death of the Crown Prince and the ascension of the defense minister, Prince Salman, as the heir apparent. Toby Jones, the author of Desert Kingdom, How Oil and Water Forged Modern Saudi Arabia, joins us to discuss the inner workings of the feudal Al Saud family, who are pursuing an aggressive foreign policy against Syria and Iran while stifling democratic stirrings of the Arab Spring at home. Then finally, we'll examine the surprise showing of Syriza in the Greek elections with Richard Wolff, who is a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Amherst, Massachusetts, and author of Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism. With over half of young Greeks and Spaniards unemployed, we will discuss the emergence of a new radical left in Europe, rebelling against the ruinous economic policies of a succession of conservative and socialist governments. Joining us now from Moscow is Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who is a Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist. He previously served as senior research officer in the Soviet Academy of Sciences, and from 1994 to 2005, published a regular column on defense in the English-language local daily paper, The Moscow Times. And in 2006, after more than 6 years as an independent defense analyst, Felgenhauer joined the staff of Novaya Gazeta. Felgenhauer's regular commentary on Russia appears in many other local and international publications, and he joins us from Moscow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer.
Thank you.
And President Putin and President Obama are meeting in the Mexican resort in Los Cabos, the G20 summit, and there's an expectation, of course, that they will discuss Syria. We also learn that Russian naval ships are being sent. It's not an official release, but apparently there's two ships, the Caesar Kunikov and the Nikolai Felchenikov, on their way. They contain lots of tanks and marines, apparently. I suspect if this is true, the reports indicate that their main mission would be to protect Russian citizens in Syria.
Well, apparently these ships are still at anchor in Sevastopol.
I see.
And there are no Marines on board, and they didn't embark yet anywhere. And, well, it was actually, there have been reports appearing that Russia may deploy some troops abroad and maybe in Syria. Russia has a small naval facility there, and also there are Russian military advisors with the Syrian military serving there, continuing to serve there since the Cold War. But sending a military contingent, though there is a small one there already, reinforcing it, though that's possible. Though hardly tanks, I would expect to appear, because. Here in Moscow, they've been talking, military officials were saying that maybe there's going to be an evacuation of Russian military personnel from Syria. And so if that's the idea, then they'll have to go without tanks and not much troops on board, because these landing vessels would need to have their cargo bays empty to take on evacuees and Russian military equipment. But Syria is indeed a serious problem between Moscow and Washington today, as to some extent is Iran. There's many problems today between Moscow and Washington. Most likely, Presidents Obama and Putin will try to iron out some of them during their meeting.
So, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, what talk is there in Moscow of an evacuation of Russian citizens and military advisers? Is that a contingency plan, or are there serious expectations that this will have to take place?
Well, there has been some discussion about that. There was the deputy chief of the Russian Air Force said that, told journalists that if there's going to be an evacuation, the Russian Air Force could provide some cover to the Russian ships if they'll be sent there. Of course, the orders apparently have not been yet given to go. Russia military deployment in the area cannot be very strategically serious. I mean, this could be only a very small force. And their force cover also is problematic because there are no Russian air bases in the area. Russia doesn't have right now not a single aircraft carrier ready to go. And to reach the Middle East, the Russian planes would most likely have to use NATO airspace, fly over Turkey, and it's not clear that Turkey will allow. And they'll have to pass from Sevastopol through the Bosphorus. And again, if Turkey and NATO begin military operations, some military operations in Syria, it's not clear that Russian forces will be allowed to go through. In 1999, there was a plan to send a rather large Russian contingent of airborne troops to Kosovo when there was the conflict between Yugoslavia and NATO. But NATO countries did not allow Russian planes to fly through, so no large Russian contingent ever appeared in the theater. Right now, Russia does not have that much projection of force capability for that far off area, so I believe this is mostly posturing. Though there's a lot of posturing, the Russian foreign policy is today very much influenced by the internal situation in Russia, where anti-government protests in Moscow have continued for more than half a year already. And the Kremlin, President Putin, believe that these protests are inspired and possibly financed from abroad, from Washington. And this is not improving Russian-American relations or Russian-American cooperation on Syria or Iran or anywhere else.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, a Moscow-based independent defense analyst, columnist, and journalist with Novaya Gazeta. But I imagine in this conversation that President Putin is having with President Obama now as we speak in Mexico, that those kind of discussions will come up. I don't think anybody in the White House would believe that the U.S. is involved in this, and I'm not even sure that Putin believes that the U.S. is really involved in stirring up Russian public opinion against himself. Is he in denial?
I believe that this is very much believed in the Kremlin. That's a serious problem right now in bilateral relations, and in and I say the Kremlin, President Putin, see a threat coming, and that makes Russian foreign policy, it influences Russian foreign policy and makes it more aggressive, I would say. But though Syria is a bit of a bridge too far, still the aggressiveness of Russian foreign policy, which many right now refer just to Mr. Putin returning to the Kremlin, and he's a kind of more harsh person than former President Medvedev, but also the internal political crisis in Russia is going to have a negative effect on foreign policy issues too.
But just to clarify this, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, I don't understand why a former KGB officer who has promoted a lot of KGB officers to his inner circle, and he seems to think and act like an intelligence officer, if there is evidence that the U.S. and other countries are manipulating Russian protests and domestic unrest against Putin, surely they would provide it, wouldn't they? They'd have the evidence. I mean, the SVR apparently is a fairly ubiquitous organization.
Oh, yes, there's evidence, of course. I mean, they say that, money found in the flat of Ksenia Sobchak must be kind of a high society girl. That's money most likely provided by the American State Department or something. I mean, yes, I mean, of course, the KGB has always been very, very effective in inventing and creating non-existent intelligence that would kind of support what the leaders of Russia always believed in, about American conspiracies, about Americans under the bed all the time. and conspiring from all sides to hinder Russia. So Mr. Putin's KGB background would even make you more susceptible to such conspiracy theories.
Well, but surely those 50,000-plus people that have been demonstrating in the streets of Moscow are not doing that because Washington tells them to do that.
Well, I mean, I'm not believing those stories, but they are a serious factor in Russian politics.
Right, but
that's a fact.
I understand, but I'm just wondering whether the Russian people believe it. I mean, apart from the people that are demonstrating,
some believe
they do.
Especially riot police. Actually, quite a number of polls taken with from riot policemen who are involved in. Dispersing some of these demonstrations, they believe that, yes, these are American mercenaries that they are beating up in the streets of Moscow.
So tell me, Dr. Pavel Felgin,
That's happening. It happened in many other countries, you know,
authoritarian.
Of course. It turns out that pro-democracy movements are American stooges.
The question, I guess, here, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, again, Moscow-based independent defense analyst, columnist, and journalist with Novaya Gazeta. The other question is, in terms of the support for Assad and in terms of the extent to which Assad and these Alawite death squads that he has, that his brother runs, that are killing people in terms of this, what's now being called a civil war, of course, there's a lot of moral outrage in the West, and I imagine that that will be the president's appeal to Putin in the G20 meeting that's taking place, that on humanitarian grounds, and perhaps he might even try to flatter Putin by saying that you're the only person in the world with sufficient influence over the Assads to get them to stop the killing. I understand that in Russia, the media basically reports pretty much what the Syrian media reports. Is that right?
Well, yes, more or less. And the Syrian situation is not, well, really much of a story in Russia. It's not on the first pages. And the fiasco of the Russian soccer team in Poland and the European Soccer Championship is much more of a real story than Syria is. So I believe appeals to Putin's consciousness at the summit will fall basically on deaf ears. They have been in the last months quite many times when I was asked by different interviewers by Al Jazeera and Westerners who are always saying, Russian attitude to Syria is changing. And I said, wait a minute, I don't see it changing. And I don't see any real change coming imminently now. There's no signs of it. Well, so I would believe that Putin is going to dig in his heels and repeat what was said before by the Russian foreign minister. And also you should understand that Russian influence over Syrian regime is not as really that serious. We cannot do much. Of course, we support them. We support them in the UN Security Council. There's some weapons arriving in Syria. And, of course, Russia is not allowing any arms embargo to be legalized by the UN. But that's more or less it. Yes, there's talk about sending a small contingent, military contingent to Syria, but no one is saying that we are going to actually fight there on anyone's side.
Sure.
And if a contingent appears, I would be very surprised if it would be more than 1,000 men. I believe it would be much less. So it's not any kind of serious force. It won't. It actually can't act independently. It can also only be part of some kind of international peacekeeping operation, or maybe be otherwise an auxiliary to the Syrian forces, but not really a serious military capability as during the Cold War when Russian military forces were deployed in Syria, they were deployed in Egypt, and they were there was a Russian fleet, a very serious Russian fleet in the Mediterranean, but that was the time of the Cold War. Right now, Russia doesn't have that capability. So our influence over Assad is a bit overestimated in the West. Though, of course, apparently we don't want to use that, what we even have, and that's also a reflection of what happened in a year ago in Libya. There's a pro-Syrian lobby in the arms trade community, in the military, military intelligence, that is clamoring that we should not abandon our Syrian friends. We should support them to the hilt. Up to now, the policy is more or less that. Though Russia has been making signals that if Assad falls, then it's okay, then we will kind of try and deal with who comes in his steps in his boots. But while he's there, we're going to more or less support the Assad regime. At least we'll not do anything to help undermine it.
Well, one would think that, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, that the foreign ministry people and the intelligence people would know sufficiently that the Syrian majority, the Sunni majority, is over 80%, and the Alawites are about 12 to 15%. The Christians have connections to the Russian Orthodox Church, but the long and the short of it is that after Assad, there will be a regime in there, a Sunni regime, that will be incredibly hostile to Russia. So I would think that some of the advice that Putin may be getting is that, you know, we've got to hedge our bets because we're too closely tied to Assad.
Well, there is a faction here that actually puts forward those arguments. One of the kind of more vocal people there is Mr. Mikhail Margilov, a Russian senator and chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the upper house of the Russian Parliament, Federation Council, it's called in Russia. Yes, there is such an opinion, but it's right now not dominating actual politics. The foreign ministry, the military intelligence and political intelligence right now are more or less supporting the present line in backing the Syrian regime and hoping that it will sometimes survive there. Well, if not, we at least will say we did all we could.
So the church, do you think the Orthodox Church obviously has close ties to the Christians in Syria? And, of course, the Christians in Syria see what happened in next door in Iraq, where the Christians were basically slaughtered and driven out of the country. What kind of influence could they have in terms of any kind of mediation?
I don't think much. And the problem is actually that Russia does not have that much influence on any side of the conflict. We cannot actually demand that, say, the West change its position. I mean, we can demand, but it won't. We cannot really pressure much of the the Syrian opposition. And our leverage on the Assad regime is also highly limited. Assad has promised Russia to make reforms and kind of move towards the compromises. Then he didn't do that, and not much Russia could do.
Sure.
Abandon him right now, that's not considered an option still.
Well,
maybe some the Russian position may change. But right now, I don't see signs of it yet. So most likely, President Putin is going to be mostly stonewalling, though he may say some kind of conciliatory words that we want to compromise, we want all sides to stop fighting. Most likely so. Still, neither on Iran, neither on Syria right now, I don't see much flexibility. And this the Russian internal situation right now also does not very much allow that. A kind of very patriotic, maybe even jingoistic line is taken in the Russian press. That's very important to maybe try and split the Russian opposition to a democracy movement, which unites nationalist, leftist, and pro-Western liberals. And so an enemy at the gate, American conspiracy, and kind of opposing the Western America on Syria or Iran may be seen as a point to rally the opposition, at least parts of the opposition, at least the nationalists, around Putin and split the opposition movement. So again, I don't see much right now for Putin, the Kremlin, to win in changing position on Syria. And so change of position is highly unlikely.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, the U.S. and Russia appear to be cooperating down in the south in the border of Afghanistan. The U.S. has basically given up negotiating with Pakistan, who are demanding extra money for shipping supplies into NATO and America's forces in Afghanistan, who are withdrawing in 2014. It looks as though they've made a deal to withdraw via the former Russian republics in the south. It's a long land route and rail route. Russia's objected to having lethal equipment, but apparently they've agreed to the withdrawal of all this equipment, a huge amount of equipment. What do you know about that? Is that realpolitik? Is that the fact that Russia doesn't want the Taliban to come back in Afghanistan and are willing to cooperate?
Well, the Taliban taking over Afghanistan, say, as it took over 90% of Afghanistan in the year 2000, would be an obvious threat to Russian interests in Central Asia. Though on the other side, such a threat would unite the authoritarian dictators of Central Asian republics to seek Russian help, and they would be much more easier to control. So again, Russia would very much want to see the United States get out of the region. And they're working out right now an agreement to withdraw equipment, including lethal equipment, from Afghanistan, though I understand there is no agreement yet on lethal equipment at all. But there are recent plans that the United States would most likely, the Pentagon would leave quite a lot of equipment there in Central Asia and sort of grant it to, make grants to the local militaries of Central Asian republics of the STAN, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and all the other STAN republics. And Russia does not like that at all. And an agreement to withdraw lethal equipment has not been signed. So, yes, there is some cooperation, but there's also constant problems because, I mean, the United States kind of opposing Taliban is good, but still Russia does not like what the U.S. is doing in Afghanistan. There have been constant complaints that the United States is not doing enough to undermine the Taliban, not doing enough to suppress production of heroin. And so there's still geopolitical kind of rivalry. So there is some cooperation, but there's also a lot of both sides actually don't like each other and suspect each other.
Well,
it's not a very good cooperation, but still there is at least some.
Well, does that mean, though, that we're already seeing a kind of return to Cold War rhetoric in the back and forth between Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Putin? And you mentioned Putin's paranoid and thinks that the U.S. is behind the protests against his regime and against United Russia in Russia. Do you see a return to the Cold War in any kind of... It's starting to happen rhetorically. I'm wondering whether it could get worse.
Yes, it could get worse, there could be serious conflicts. There could be even wars like the one in what happened in August 2008 when Russian forces invaded Georgia. I don't see any real possibility of bilateral relations really getting much better before there's a change of regime in Moscow. Well, maybe there'll be also a change of regime in Washington. There's elections coming up. And most likely afterwards somewhere there could be a move to really find a quid pro quo and a much better basic foundation for better relations.
Well, it won't happen under Romney. Romney's already said that Russia is America's number one geopolitical foe.
Traditionally, actually, Russian professional diplomats and intelligence people and military prefer Republicans. That they don't like Democrats. They believe that they are kind of posturing about human rights, and the realpolitik Republicans have always been a better bargaining team for Russia traditionally. All major Russian-American breakthroughs happened under Republican administrations. The biggest one, of course, under Richard Nixon, actually, of all people.
Well, and under Ronald Reagan, too. So,
yes.
Question.
And George Bush, the elder.
That's right. No, it's no question that the historical record is very clear on that. Well, I thank you so much for joining us from Moscow, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer, who's a Moscow-based defense analyst, columnist, and journalist. He previously served as senior research officer in the Soviet Academy of Sciences, and from 1994 to 2005, he published a regular column on defense in the English-language local daily, the Moscow Times. And in 2006, after more than 6 years as an independent defense analyst, Felgenhauer joined the staff of Novaya Gazeta. Felgenhauer's regular commentary on Russia appears in many other local and international publications, and he joined us from Moscow. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the leadership shuffles in Saudi Arabia with the deaths of crown princes.
USSR. Well, the delivery girl's really